Hello and welcome to this week's edition of the Politically Speaking Podcast. I'm your host, Chris McDaniel, a reporter with St. Louis Public Radio. Joining me in St. Louis is...
Joe Manis.
And joining us in Jefferson City are...
Jason Rosenbaum.
And...
Tim Jones, Speaker of the Missouri House.
We have them both coming in through a system of satellites and telephone lines and the internet. So hopefully this sounds good to you listeners.
It's very futuristic.
The podcast is all about experimenting.
It's all about experimentation. So, Joe, it's the last week of the session.
Okay. Main things is the budget was done on time, as usual. The House and Senate also succeeded in overriding the governor's veto of the tax cut bill. So now in this final week, there's a number of measures that had been in the wings, waiting for their last liftoff or last landing. And among those were the 72-hour waiting period on abortion, the potential right to work, the proposed photo ID ballot measure. There's a new thing. There's now a fight over whether or not to require automakers to use dealerships, which was going to affect Tesla, the electric car manufacturer, which has become like a last-minute thing. And the big thing, though, is the school transfer bill is still – they're still trying to work out a deal on that. So those are just a number of measures that – a lot of these are pending on what goes on in the Senate, but there's a number in the House as well. And I'm sure Speaker Jones also has some insight, far more than me, on what he hopes can come down in the next few days and what may not.
So, Mr. Speaker, are things playing out about like you had anticipated, or are different things coming up than you would have thought from the beginning of the session? How is it playing out on your end?
Well, I would say all in all, this has been a very significant substantive session as far as many of the accomplishments that have already made it across the finish line. And as far as the tax cut override goes, we have to call that historic for a number of reasons. It's the first major tax reform and reduction package that has become law in our state in nearly 100 years. So that is history making in and of itself. And it was the 13th override of this governor. It was also done in a bipartisan fashion. We had a Democrat vote on that bill in the first round of approval, and then a different Democrat joined us in the override. So obviously there were pieces of that bill as that was bipartisan in nature, that was appealing to Democrats, and it was historic in nature. So, you know, there's a number of other items that have already made it to the governor's desk, the massive criminal code rewrite, which was truly bipartisan in nature. Apparently, the governor has decided not to veto that, so that will become law. That was a major accomplishment. The budget, you know, something we, you know, Joe mentioned it was done on time as usual, but I hesitate to take anything for granted in the legislature after 8 years. That was, again, a great accomplishment, and it included some major items in it and additional pieces such as the capital improvements portion of that, funding for Fulton Mental Health Hospital. So, you know, I could go on and on. There's been many accomplishments. There's a few things waiting to be done. The student transfer issue that was referenced is something they're working on as we speak. A lot of moving parts in that, a lot of stakeholders, a lot of different opinions. But we're trying to do what we can to make sure that all the children in the state have access to a great education. So, again, I'd say it's been a significant substantive year, with some major accomplishments already completed and some that are still waiting to get across the finish line.
Now, for the school transfer bill, when that passed out of the House, it did not get the 109 needed to potentially override a veto. And on that particular bill, the governor has been pretty adamant that he does not like the so-called private option, which would allow people in unaccredited districts to transfer to a non-sectarian private school in certain circumstances. Do you think that whatever comes out of this conference report is going to be palatable enough for enough House people to potentially override a veto? Or do you think it'll be a situation like the criminal code where there'll be a lot of pressure on Nixon to just sign the bill and, you know, address a pretty serious problem in St. Louis and Kansas City?
With the degree of severity that this issue is and the importance of bringing a solution across the finish line, coupled with the fact that this issue has enjoyed bipartisan consensus support from all different factions all along the way, I would truly hope that if we bring a good package across the finish line, that the governor would allow it to become law, because it is too important for him to veto that. This is about making sure that children have access to a great education no matter where they reside, and the bill also includes all the necessary components of balancing the needs of the sending and receiving school districts. So there are so many issues involved in this good piece of compromise legislation that I would truly urge the governor to understand all the hard work that's gone into this from both sides of the aisle and through both chambers, and to make sure that this does become law.
Now, of course, as in every session, there's always these unexpected little issues that erupt. And in this case, one that has erupted in the last few days is about Tesla, the electric car manufacturer, which would be affected by a provision that was put in the Senate that would require all automakers who sell in the state to use dealerships. And Tesla does not. They sell directly to customers. Now, I had been told by Majority Leader John Deal late Monday afternoon that there had been some sort of agreement on the House side, and the House wasn't going to accept that provision. And then about an hour later, I got another text from him saying things changed. So now that provision is still apparently in the measure that's before the House. I was interested, Mr. Speaker, in your assessment of what may or may not happen with that. Apparently, a bunch of Tesla owners brought their cars on Monday to park around the Capitol.
They did. I talked with one of them.
I was interested in your thoughts about this whole issue.
Well, Joe, you're right. It has just popped up in the last couple of days, and it is a brand new issue. And you wonder if we will have the time to address such a major issue in the last 4 days of session, but that's why we're here, and it's to tackle issues like this. So I would say that we're going to have to vet this through the House and have a discussion on the topic. We're going to have to balance a lot of interests here. We have the interests of our entire state's small business community relating to automobile dealers and the way that they conduct do business in the state. They're all subject to various rules and regulations and in the industry, and they all have to comply with those, and it's part of the way they do business versus something like Tesla, which, you know, it is an exciting – well, it's I guess it's been around since 2008 or so, but it's still a relatively new product, a relatively new way of doing business, and we're going to have to debate how we're going to deal with that issue here in the state of Missouri. You know, I honestly don't know that I've formulated an opinion on it yet, other than, you know, we do have to balance the needs of our current small business industry of automobile dealers with this new issue that Tesla has now brought us.
Could this fight scuttle the whole bill? The provision, as you know, this is for our listeners, is on a bill that basically deals with ATVs, all terrain vehicles. So is this the kind of issue that could end up killing the whole bill?
You know, everything is possible, and that often – sometimes that does become the case when you have an issue like this pop up placed onto a bill, and then the bill becomes paralyzed because of the issue like this. So I think everything's on the table right now, and it's something we honestly just have to see if we can work through in these next few days.
Now, speaking of cars and trucks and transportation, another thing that's unresolved is this so-called transportation tax, which – started off as a 1% sales tax increase, has now been whittled down a little bit to 0.75. Now, talk about wacky legislative trajectories. This was pretty much killed in the Senate by three conservative senators with the help of, I think, a couple of Democrats. And it ended up passing the Senate this year. And now it seems like House Democrats aren't going to support it, which would mean that it wouldn't have enough votes to make it onto the ballot. Is that something that's going to be coming up over the next couple of days of session, or is that going to be hitting a detour, so to speak?
You know, I do think it will be debated. I do believe it will come up. But now you see there is a lot of consternation about this proposal, and it's come from all different political sources and sides and viewpoints. People on the left and the right have objected to this, and I think it's because we are still in challenging, difficult economic times, and folks on throughout the political spectrum are really unsure of whether raising sales taxes is the way to support transportation funding. I absolutely believe we need to do something for transportation funding, and I have talked with others about, you know, about a bonding package, about putting it into our budget, making sure that's actually in the budget as an appropriated line item, like many, many, many states do. I've actually asked those questions and found out that many states take care of it directly through their budget. And I think it's something we need to look long term, because this sales tax, even if it gets through the legislature as a proposal, it still has to go to the ballot and be approved by the people. And the polling on this issue is barely over 50% right now. I don't know that there's a lot of appetite all across the political spectrum with consumers, with taxpayers, to add sales tax, to add another sales tax to a weighty tax burden. And people are, I think, concerned about that. So I think it will come up. I think its fate is still unforeseen at this point.
Mr. Speaker, does the fact that the transportation tax, as you mentioned, is polling so very narrowly, 50-50, does this send a message regarding the broader issue that has been debated a bit over the last few years about shifting Missouri from having a state income tax to having a higher sales tax? Does this make that change potentially less likely?
Not necessarily, because we still do have a significant income tax. Even if the bill that we passed this year, which, you know, the historic tax reduction reform bill, when that becomes effective, we've just taken a first step. And our income tax, believe it or not, if it, you know, as it goes down to 5.5%, if the new revenue figures are met, let's remember that the income tax bill we passed only goes into effect if new revenues trigger those reductions. If it goes down to 5.5%, we are still higher than Illinois. Illinois has an income tax of 5%. You know, we have to look around other states where they've effectively pursued this model. And Tennessee, I think, is a great example. They have never had a state income tax. They, of course, have a sales tax. And their budget is larger than Missouri's. They have increasing revenues. And that is a state that is very similar to Missouri. Two major population centers, similar population. However, their population's growing, whereas Missouri's is stagnant or actually declining. And they have more revenues coming into their budget for things like education, healthcare, economic development. So I think the jury is definitely still out on whether we should replace our income tax with a consumption sales tax. Other states have done it and are doing rather well, arguably better than Missouri. So I think that's a debate that will continue into the future.
Jason is there and had has more knowledge of a deal that apparently had been struck overnight in the Senate regarding several bills, including the proposed photo ID ballot measure, the 72-hour waiting period for abortions, and early voting. Jason, do you want to ask the speaker about that and get his reaction to? Because several of these bills had been high on his agenda.
Jason, why don't you summarize what deal was struck?
Yeah, sorry for the crosstalk there. I haven't had my coffee yet. So, and I just want to point out that Marshall Griffin was actually here. I was just watching from afar in my hotel room while my MacBook Pro was crashing. So all praise be to him. So what apparently has happened was the 72-hour waiting period for an abortion bill, it had been subject to a filibuster by the 9 Democrats in the Senate, which is not unexpected. They often filibuster anything dealing with anything that tries to curtail abortion rights. And it looked like that the 7-year moratorium on the previous question in the Senate was perilously close to being struck down. But what ended up happening was it seems like the Democrats and Republicans struck a deal that the 72-hour waiting period and another measure dealing with early voting would go through the Senate if another measure dealing with photo identification for voting, and so-called paycheck protection, which deals with paycheck deductions of union dues, wouldn't come up to the Senate. Now, when we were talking earlier, the Speaker and I, this was, I think, one of the first times he's heard of this situation. But I know that he's an attorney and is fast on his feet. So what is kind of your reaction to this news, Mr. Speaker?
Well, I would first of all say that I won't try and pretend to guess what deals have been struck or if actually a deal has been struck with the Senate. I have not received any information from Senate leadership or anyone in the Senate regarding that issue. I do know the Senate, especially at the end of session, they have to balance a lot of issues and a lot of member priorities and differences between the parties on moving big, heavy legislation. It's very difficult because of the filibuster rule. So if they had to work something out to move bills forward, then I won't try and pretend I know their business better than they do. I would be very pleased with the two bills that they move forward because we've worked very hard on those. However, I would urge them to try and continue to work on the paycheck protection bill and the voter ID legislation, because those are issues that have been priorities for both chambers in all the years I've been here. And the paycheck protection bill has passed out of both chambers and actually was sent to the governor's desk last year before it was vetoed. So when you look at – if you look at just the simple question of is there support in the General Assembly for those other two measures of paycheck protection and voter ID, yes, there is. And voter ID enjoys 70% to 80% approval across the state. And paycheck protection is popular as well amongst the people of the state of Missouri in giving union members the right, their own choice to decide how they want their dues spent. So these are very popular issues amongst the people. And so I would hope the Senate would continue to try to move forward on those priorities in the last few days. And we'll just have to stay tuned to see whether or not a grand bargain was actually reached or if this is late night rumors from 2 a.m.
Yeah, we have all been subject to those from time to time, including on the Tesla bill yesterday where things changed every few minutes. And I had to change my story several times. Mr. Speaker, are there any other major issues or minor ones that you think could disrupt or get the House, take a lot of House action within the next few days?
You know, in returning to an issue we discussed earlier, I really think the issue of the student transfer bill will be one of the major issues that has continued to be worked on in the House and will be debated. It is an important issue that we must try and do all we can for the children of our state, for our public school districts, to provide parents and students the choice for a great education no matter where they reside, but also make sure we balance the needs of those sending and receiving districts who are having to deal with the nuts and bolts of the day-to-day issues of educating our children. And I think the bill that has moved forward is balanced and good and fair and reasonable and wise, and we'll just have to see if we can get it across the finish line. And other than that, I think we'll be waiting to see if the Senate is going to move any other major pieces of legislation here in these last few days, such as the ones we have discussed.
And I guess these are the waning hours of your speakership. You are term limited after this. A couple of questions. What have you kind of learned being speaker? What have been the highlights? What have been the lowlights? And would you ever suggest somebody be crazy enough to pursue the speakership?
You really have to question your sanity sometimes, don't you? But no, all kidding aside, it's been an immense honor. It's been a great responsibility. It is challenging. It is a true sacrifice on your family, on the folks and your colleagues. I have a small business, a law firm. My colleagues have been very helpful to me over the last few years. But you put all that in your life on hold. And you really devote yourself full time nearly to trying to run the institution of the Missouri House, which is an incredible and awesome responsibility. I would say that there have been frustrations and there have been great victories all along the way. And you do have to keep everything in perspective and take the good with the bad. I would say I've learned patience probably more than anything. I've learned the speaker is not the king. The speaker does not, or the queen, does not receive what he or she wants every day or even sometimes every week. You have to build consensus with your own members. It's helpful to reach across the aisle. It's helpful to reach across to the chamber. I've learned that persistence does pay off. There were some issues that did not make it completely across the finish line last year, which we have succeeded on bringing across the finish line this year. So you do have to definitely use your sugar and your spice at the right times. And I think collaboration, consensus building, but having an agenda that you continually try to move your caucus forward on is what a good speaker needs to have.
Now, looking ahead for the next couple of years, there's been a lot of talk about what you may be planning to do as far as running for statewide office. You have close to $1 million in your campaign account. Anything you want to be specific about? I know there's been a lot of speculation about whether or not you're looking at attorney general or secretary of state or something else. At this point, have you made any decisions?
You know, Joe, I have not made any firm decisions yet. I would say that I have really enjoyed traveling the state, and I'm getting to dozens and dozens and dozens of different counties, conducting 4 statewide speaking tours, listening tours where I've gone out and listened to Missourians. I've met people from all 4 corners of the state and in between. I think people have been appreciative of the fact that I have gone out and traveled the state and listened to them and visited them in their home communities. And so it's been an honor to serve them. And if the people of the state want to support me in a future public service endeavor, it's definitely something I'll take into context as I'm making up my decision. But I do need to finish the session first. I need to visit more fully with my family, my friends, my supporters, my colleagues, and my coworkers, and make sure that whatever decision I make is the best for everyone involved, especially my family. So it's been a great honor serving the state in this capacity as a statewide leader already, as Speaker of the House. And as I've said, if that support continues to be there, it's definitely something I will absolutely consider because I've enjoyed public service. I've enjoyed serving my state. My number one priority every single day has been to do all I can to make Missouri a better place to live, to work, and to raise a family. And I think we've done some significant things to move us forward in a positive way on those goals.
Well, continuing to look into the future, but somewhat more in the short-term future, in September's veto session, what are you anticipating? Are you foreseeing that it'll be a somewhat eventful one like last year? I know you've already overridden one bill that was pretty big bill this year. So are you foreseeing this veto session as being a substantial one like last year?
It could be. It very well could be because we don't receive very much interaction from the governor on legislation until after it's said and done. And I think we would be able to be a more effective General Assembly. I think we've been very effective with many of the overrides we've had and many of the legislation that we've passed. But we could really have much more of a cooperative spirit if our governor would engage more actively with the legislature as we're working on bills instead of bringing up complaints about bills after they're passed and only after they're passed. So it's really hard to tell. So I would say it could be an active veto session again, depending on what the governor decides he's going to veto that we're not aware of.
All right. Well, thank you for joining us. Let me close this out here. You can read all of our stories at stlpublicradio.org. You can follow me on Twitter at @CSMcDaniel. Joe, you can be followed on Twitter.
At Jay Manis. That's J-M-A-N-N-I-E-S.
Jason, you can be followed on Twitter at?
Jay Rosenbaum.
And Mr. Speaker, you can be followed on Twitter as well.
Absolutely. At Speaker Tim Jones.
Well, we'll be back next week. Until then, so long.